This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for November 3rd, 2017. On today's show, there isn't much to talk about. We'll talk about some news, including the likelihood of a Goonies sequel in the spoiler room. We'll be discussing some Stranger Things theories and some discussion of the after credit scenes for Thor Ragnarok. We will give you proper notice of spoilers in case you haven't seen either of those. This is Peter Sorda, and joining me on today's show are Slash Film senior writer Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's up?
And Slash Film managing editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
How's it going, guys? It's a slow day.
Oh, yeah, very God, slow. It's a slow day. We're picking bottom of the barrel right now, it feels like.
Yesterday on the podcast, Ben wasn't here, but we did our five favorite TV shows of the last 5 years. And we got a lot of email. Why no Game of Thrones? I can tell you why it wasn't on my list. It wasn't on my list because it's not one of my favorite shows. I stopped watching it. I am the lone freak in the Slash Film writer's room who does not love Game of Thrones. But I guess, Jacob, you were on the podcast, and Game of Thrones was not on your list, even though you do the recaps for the site, you love the show. Why was Game of Thrones not on your list?
I have a really good reason, actually, and maybe something I should have made clear when we did the episode, which is I took the five-year cutoff pretty seriously, and I tried to pick shows that actually started within the past 5 years. I know you guys kind of give yourself a little more leeway, but they said 2012 or earlier is when I decided to pick my favorite shows of the past 5 years. And Game of Thrones started in 2011. Simple as that. If it was 2012, I would have picked it. It's really that simple. Game of Thrones is one of my favorite shows of all time. It's great. It's wonderful. I'm actually really happy people responded and came to the defense of the most popular show in the world.
who could have predicted that?
I kid because I love. But it's a great show. I just was a bit more strict in my rules. And I feel like I felt like it was an opportunity to talk about The Good Place and Hannibal and shows that I don't think get as much love as Game of Thrones. It all worked out in the end.
Yeah. And if Ben was on, he probably would have put it on his list because he's a huge Game of Thrones nut. Yes. Actually, Ben, really quick, other than Game of Thrones, what would have been your favorite TV shows of the last 5 years?
Oh, God.
Do you have any, not to put you on the spot. But,
yeah, this is totally putting me on the spot. I would put the first season of Stranger Things in there because I really love that season of television. I'm sort of flailing trying to remember when exactly shows premiered and ended and all of that stuff. Was Terriers in the last 5 years? Because
no
if
way.
It was, I would definitely put that in there. It's probably a little older.
Yeah, that's older, I think.
I don't know. I don't know, Peter. I'll try to come up with a list and I'll get back to you. My dates are all sort of swimming around in my head right now. So I will try to put that together just because it's a fun exercise just for my own personal True Detective. Does that count?
Yeah, that True Detective counts.
Okay. And I haven't listened. I listened to the news portion of yesterday's episode while I was out for a run this morning, but I had to cut it off at the part right where you guys started talking about your favorite shows. So I haven't even heard all of your selections yet. So I look forward to listening to that, catching up later on today. But I'll get back to you.
And by the way, I do want to add, there's one show that I didn't mention yesterday that I wish I had mentioned, and that's the Netflix TV show Narcos. I absolutely love the first two seasons. I, for whatever reason, have watched only two episodes of that new third season, which has a different follows a different drug cartel, and I haven't really gotten into it. I think I gotta actually go back and rewatch those first two episodes, because I think I was, you know, it was late at night and I was falling asleep, and that's probably not a a good thing for the show, but I absolutely love those first two seasons. I feel like if it was just if there wasn't a third season, that show would have been on my list for sure. But let's get into the lone news item, and that is Sean Astin is doing press for Stranger Things 2, and he was asked about the possibility of a Goonies sequel. Is it going to happen, Ben?
He says, and I quote, "It's always possible. I will say that it's likely that it will happen. I don't know when, but I have always had confidence that the sequel will happen, mostly because Steven Spielberg, from the time when I was a kid, told me he wanted it to happen, and he has never changed his opinion." So that is the quote from Sean Astin about the long rumored sequel to The Goonies, which has been, you know, I think Richard Donner, the director of the original film, said in 2014 that they were developing a sequel officially. There's been tons of starts and stops on this project over the years, and, you know, articles that are like, yes, it's happening, and then other people, you know, members of the cast being like, it's never going to happen. So I think even Sean Astin himself a few years ago in like 2015 was like, it's 100% going to happen. We wrote about that, you know, his previous statement. So this is a long time coming. But I guess the question is, do you want to see a Goonies sequel after all these years? Peter, I think you're probably the lone fan of that movie on this particular episode. What do you think?
You know, I love the Goonies. I do want to see its legacy continue. By the way, and it isn't for a lack of trying. I think Sean Astin says that, you know, they just haven't been able to find a story that makes it work in the way that it is worth doing. So it's not that, like, the cast doesn't want to do it. It's not that Steven Spielberg doesn't want to. I mean, he mentioned Steven Spielberg wants to do it. It's, you know, Donner wants to do it. And I think that's the problem, is, like, it would be so easy to create kind of, like, you know, a bad Goonies sequel. I mean, we experienced that in NES with Goonies 2, whatever that was, with the mermaid. It was horrible. I don't know. I feel like if you had asked me this a few years ago, I would have said yes. But then there has been kind of the surge in movies trying to be that, like, you know, Super 8 and Stranger Things and those kind of, you know, even It, I guess, in a way. And I think we're being serviced in that department of, you know, kids on adventure, kids in danger, that whole thing. And I'm not sure. I guess my big worry with the Goonies sequel is that it would be all fan service. And I guess the most obvious way of doing it is having the kid, you know, the kids are now grown up and then we're following their kids. But, like, you know, I don't want to see a grown up Chunk doing the truffle shuffle and, you know, Data, like, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure I want to see that. What about you guys? I mean, I know you guys aren't fans of Goonies. Do you think a Goonies sequel will happen? And do you think there is any way to do it where it would be good?
What do you think,
Jacob? Should they make a Goonies sequel, it will force everyone to revisit the first Goonies, realize it's terrible, and everything falls down. The internet collapses. I kid, because I know when I used to work for Movies Dot Com and Fandango, my editor, Eric Davis, loves the Goonies. It's his favorite film. And I would always make cracks with the Goonies, and he would always knock it. Like, annoyed, he'd get upset, like, saddened that I didn't like the Goonies because it meant so much to him. So I always try to be careful when I talk about how much I don't like the Goonies, because it means so much to people. But I think it's a bad movie, and I think a sequel would only make more people come to that conclusion. And I don't want to break more hearts. I don't want to break Eric's heart. I don't want to break Peter's heart. You guys like this movie, and I don't want to hurt you.
Yeah, the one thing that I thought was might work is that in that same interview, Sean Astin talks about how he would love to see a Goonies animated series, and he would like to come back and provide the voice of Mikey, the same character that he played all those years ago in 1985. So I do think that seems like something that might be a little easier to swallow instead of you know, something that, as Peter mentioned, would probably be tons, you know, full of tons of fan service and all that. You know, like the idea of Josh Brolin and Sean Astin and all these people coming back to reprise their roles all these years later just sort of makes my eyes roll out of my head. So I don't know. I think an animated series would be the way to go if the Goonies legacy must go on.
I don't know, guys. I'm so conflicted about it, but we must move on. There isn't a lot of news today, so we have a bunch of stuff that we're going to be talking about in the spoiler room. We're going to go with Thor Ragnarok first, because that comes out today, and a lot of people are seeing that today and this weekend, whereas I think Stranger Things is more of, you know, takes more time investment. So we'll get to that after. But if you have not seen Thor Ragnarok, you can stop here, or you can skip ahead to our discussion of Stranger Things. Future me will jump in and tell you where in the time code you can jump to right now. Future Peter here. Go to 24 minutes in to hear a spoiler discussion of Thor Ragnarok. Okay, so there it was. Okay, so let's talk about Thor Ragnarok. All three of us have seen the movie. Let's talk a little bit about the spoilers. The movie ends with an after credit scene that teases what, Jacob?
If you just see the movie by itself, it doesn't tease much of anything. As you've seen the movie, so a quick recap. Movie ends with Asgard as a place completely obliterated in Ragnarok, which was the thing that Thor actually needed to do to save his people, because Asgard as a people will live on, and now they're refugees or nomads in this spaceship crewed by a gladiator army heading toward Earth and refuge. It's actually a really cool, bittersweet ending for it's a very funny and entertaining movie.
By the way, I want to interrupt you here because I wanted to share, I don't know anything, but just looking at the, you know, reading between the lines, this seems to me like Thor is going to die in Infinity War, right? Like, they've gotten rid of Asgard. You know, it's almost like, you know, they're wiping the slate clean. Is there any way he survives?
I would like to see him survive only because I love... Right now, if you read Thor comics, they're jumping between timelines a lot. And one of the timelines, you see young Thor, you see modern Thor, you see old Thor. And old Thor is this grizzled warrior with one arm, like, standing against the forces of darkness on the throne of Asgard. And I love that vision. So even if we don't see more Thor, like, his lead character in movies, I love the idea of him off protecting his people, leading his people as, like, his old warrior king. So I love that vision. But at the same time, someone's got to bite it in Infinity War. And I feel like... The original guys, Captain America, Iron Man, and Thor, whose contracts are running up, are the guys who seem like the guys who they can lose the easiest because it had the most played out. So yeah, I can see it happening. I wish it won't, but I think it'll happen.
Yeah, and I sort of think that if they showed in D23 that footage of Thanos sort of palming Thor's head and squeezing on it, if they showed that in such an early teaser, it seems almost like a redirect or something, you know, like a misdirect. Like, I don't know if they would full on commit to that and show it that early. If Thor actually does die that way in the movie, I don't know. Just a thought.
And one last thing before we actually get to this, because we have so much time to kill. One of my big problems with Thor Ragnarok, or the only problems I had with Thor Ragnarok, is kind of that the humor, which is the best part of that movie, kind of undercuts the drama at times. Like, you know, in that moment where Asgard kind of blows up, there, you know, is a joke made by who, Korg or someone on the spaceship.
Yeah, Korg.
And it, you know, it should be this dramatic, sad moment of, you know, Asgard blowing up and, you know, the whole audience is laughing. Were either of you bothered by that?
I wasn't, only because Korg is maybe my favorite Marvel supporting character of all time. I find him so funny that I don't care. I understand that criticism, and I think that maybe the biggest criticism people have about Thor Ragnarok is how much it values comedy over drama. But in that moment, I was fine with it, because Korg made me laugh so much, so often, and I was grateful for the laugh, because I don't always laugh at Thor movies. They're usually not funny at all.
Yeah, same.
Okay, now Jacob, tell us what happens in the first after-credit sequence in Thor.
All right, the first after-credit sequence, it's very simple. We find Thor and Loki sitting on the ship and having conversation, and then a giant spaceship that dwarfs the spaceship that carries the entirety of Asgard looms over them, and it's cut to black. No indication of who's in the ship. I racked my brain to see if there's any connection of this design to comics. I couldn't think of one. I'd love to hear more thoughts from bigger readers than me if they can come up with one. So all we can do is bring what we know about Infinity War and compare it to this footage, and then it starts telling a more coherent picture. And this is where I'm going to talk a little bit about the footage from Infinity War that screened at Comic-Con and D23. We've written about it before. We've spoken about it before. But if you don't want anything about Infinity War to be known, if you want that to be totally secret, I'd recommend maybe skipping ahead a little bit. Because in that footage, the first thing we see is Guardians of the Galaxy in their ship flying through a bunch of wreckage and Thor, unconscious and beaten, slamming into their windshield. And it looks like they've come across the aftermath of a battle in space where Thor has been left behind, surrounded by wreckage, which means one of two things. It means that there was a fight and Thor stayed behind, fighting somebody while Asgard escaped, or Asgard's been completely blown up by Thanos, presumably the guy in this spaceship. And after an entire movie spent saving Asgard and protecting his legacy, he gets blown up by this giant spaceship right here. And I hope it's the former, because I would like the idea of Thor Ragnarok feeling like it actually matters and not being wiped out by Thanos in the next movie that features Thor. But it really feels like that scene in the mid-credits is less about teasing something specific or laying the groundwork for an Easter egg or a character, or more about saying, hey, Infinity War opens with Thanos attacking Thor and Asgard and leaving Thor in a position to meet the Guardians and get that plot going. I know Ben has not seen this footage, but Peter, you've seen it twice at D23 and at Comic-Con. Does this line up to you?
I think it lines up for me. And also, by the way, we're going to publish an interview that I did with Marvel Studios head Kevin Feige on Monday that will be filled with spoiler questions and answers. And one of those, I actually asked him, I said, you know, whose ship is this? And, Kevin being a sly guy said, What do you think? What do you want it to be? And I said, you know, most people seem to think it's Thanos' ship. And he said, he started nodding his head. And he said, it's a good guess. And I said, good guess. And he said, yeah, you won't have to wait very long to find out. I said, interesting. He said, what is it, 7 months, 8 months? So I think you're dead on. I think this is going to lead right directly into the opening of Avengers Infinity War. I can't imagine that all of Asgard is destroyed that simply, though. So I don't know.
Yeah, I speculated in the article that it could be that the wreckage Guardians are flying through could be pieces of Thanos' ship, it could be pieces of the Asgardian ship, or for all we know, Thor is fighting a bunch of like individual fighters launched by Thanos, and he destroyed a bunch of those, and that's why he's left behind, surrounded by wreckage. I would be really bummed out if Thanos kills every last Asgardian save Thor in the opening of Infinity War. We know Loki survives because there's footage in the Infinity War trailer of Loki confronting Thanos. And as Ben mentioned, there's a shot of Thanos grabbing Thor's head in this really kind of nasty way that shows like God of Thunder is being gripped like a baseball by this massive purple guy.
And what's also interesting is the footage that we saw at D23 in Comic-Con had Thor with two eyes. You know, at the end of Thor Ragnarok, he loses an eye. What do you think this is? Do you think they shot another take just for the knowing that they were going to have to put him in these convention footage? Or do you think, like, you know, they just put that in later on?
I know that our own Ethan Anderton, or Bradford Omen, wherever he goes by in the podcast. Hi, Brad. Hi, Ethan. Yeah. Was on the set of Thor Ragnarok. We said that Chris Hemsworth was wearing a makeup prosthetic for his missing eye. So it makes me think that some poor digital artist was tasked with reinserting Chris Hemsworth's eyeball for those scenes in the footage. I feel like it makes a lot more sense than shooting alternate takes and removing prosthetics and trying to bet, oh, this will be a trailer shot for Comic-Con. Yeah. So my bet would be...
But they haven't Marvel has done that in the past. They have, you know, moved up stuff to the beginning of their shoot just to get it to show it at Comic-Con, or, you know, and shot like exclusive footage just for Comic-Con. Obviously, you know, J.J. Abrams did this to protect the big reveal in Star Trek Into Darkness. They did some ADRing to kind of remove it out of the footage that they showed press. So this wouldn't be the first time that this happens. But that, yeah, that would be a very expensive, digital retouch job, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Ben, you haven't seen the Infinity War footage. How does it sound to you?
I mean, it sounds like you guys know what you're talking about, because I haven't seen that footage. I can't really chime in too much, but especially with, you know, in conjunction with Feige's comments, it sounds like you're pretty dead on.
Yeah. I also asked, you know, there's a moment in Thor where Loki is in Odin's, in his vault, and he walks by the cosmic cube, the Tesseract, and it kind of cuts with him like looking at it. And I asked him about that, and he basically said, well, you saw the Comic-Con footage, right? And in that Comic-Con footage, he had the cosmic cube. So we assume that he removed the cosmic cube, that that one of the Infinity Stones was not blown up in that gigantic explosion of Asgard. And obviously, you know, Thanos wants it, which is probably why Loki is still alive.
What are the chances that Loki offers it up to Thanos to join his side and betray Thor again? I feel like that feels very likely.
It's so weird, though. The movie kind of ended like it was kind of the end of that. But I guess you can never trust Loki, right?
I guess.
Yeah. Ben, you wrote this article up about the Warriors 3 and what happened to them in Thor Ragnarok. What do we know?
Yes. So the Warriors 3, if you don't recall from the previous Thor movies, are comprised of Fandral, Hogun, and Volstagg, played by Zachary Levi, Tabanudo Asano, and Ray Stevenson. And these are basically Thor's backup, for lack of a better term. They're like a bunch of Asgardian warriors that have his back and have, you know, fought alongside him for years. In Thor Ragnarok, they are pretty quickly killed by Cate Blanchett's Hela with almost, I mean, it was like a throwaway gag almost how quickly they die. So in a new interview, Kevin Feige was asked about this. And he said, they had noble ends, mainly to serve the arrival of Hela, the arrival of the biggest villain into the MCU, who within the first 5 minutes destroys the hammer, kicks Loki and Thor out of Asgard, and kills almost anyone we've ever met before in the other movies, which is really, we want it to start with a bang. So mission accomplished there. Did you guys feel the loss of the Warriors 3 in any way, or did you just sort of nod and chuckle at that, because this movie is definitely not like the previous Thor movies?
I didn't feel the loss of anybody in this movie, which is strange. You know, Odin dies, and it's not like this. It's this weird scene, you know, like in Iceland or something.
Norway.
Sorry, yeah. Norway. Sorry. Oh no. What about you, Jacob?
I'm torn, because the Warriors 3 are characters I like in the comics, or more specifically, Volstagg, Ray Stevenson's character, is a pretty big part of the Thor comics, especially the current ones, where he plays a really big role. He's like a politician and a warrior, and just one of the major supporting characters. I've grown to love him in the pages of the comics, but those characters never came to life on screen, and they always were dead weight. I kept on waiting for the moment in the movies where they would step up and become characters of value, and not just background actors stand behind Chris Hemsworth and give him something else to look at beyond Natalie Portman. And I don't know. I wish they were around more, because I would have liked to see them grow into something more, but it's clear that they didn't have any plans to do that. So I'm glad they're gone. I guess it sounds harsh, but if you're going to kill somebody, kill characters nobody likes.
And Jamie Alexander, the actress that plays Sif in the Thor movies, did not appear on screen in this film. I think Feige was asked about that. It had something to do with she has a role on this popular TV show, Blind Spot, so I think she just was unavailable at the time. But Feige was asked about this somewhere, and I believe he said, you know, her story is going to be told at a later time. So maybe she's still alive. Maybe she got killed in that big explosion. Who knows? But now's probably the time to cut it off, because Jacob, you have not seen Stranger Things 2.
I have not. I've been waiting to sit down and watch it. I've read every single article on slashfilm.com about it as part of my job, so I know what happens, but I've yet to actually see a second of it.
Okay, well, we'll let you go from this discussion as we dive into Stranger Things 2 theories and spoilers. Jacob, where can we find more of your work online?
I'm on slashfilm every single day, and I'm on Twitter where I am at Jacob S. Hall.
Okay, we've already had a long spoiler-filled discussion of our reactions to Stranger Things 2. If you have not seen Stranger Things 2, you probably want to turn this off now and revisit it later after you've seen it, because we're probably going to be discussing some, you know, plot points that happen during the show. One of the things that we talked about on the discussion podcast was that, you know, we were kind of disappointed. I think we were all kind of disappointed by that the end of the season tease of season 3 for Stranger Things. You know, the first season had such a better tease setting up a second season. The one at the end of season 2 kind of basically just pulled out in the school and, you know, turned upside down and revealed the upside down version of that world, which is kind of like, I don't know. I could take it or leave it. It's not, you know, anything exciting. In a new interview with Collider, producer Sean Levy reveals that that wasn't always the case. The Duffer Brothers originally planned several epilogues that would set up an inevitable Stranger Things 3. Here is the quote from Sean Levy. There were epilogue scenes that were considered for after that final shot that would have hinted more at season 3. But there was a decision made by all of us where we said, let's not back into any promises again. We always felt that after season 1 that we had to pay off that slug that Will coughs up in the sink, or follow up on Hopper putting the Eggos out in the wooden lockbox in the woods. This time, the Duffer Brothers very consciously wanted to promise less so that their freedom was more. So what does that sound like to you, Ben? That sounds like to me that they don't know where they're going.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't blame them, because, you know, from a creative standpoint, it is probably better to, you know, keep your options open. But just, you know, I think that's like to the detriment of the ending of season 2. I'm sure it will pay dividends for season 3, where they'll feel, you know, a little bit more free to take the story in different directions. But without hinting at that, it sort of leaves the audience flailing a little bit, you know, like it seemed anticlimactic. It seemed like they didn't really know what they're doing. And that's not exactly something, you know, if you don't know what you're doing as a showrunner, that's fine. That's, you know, television is like it's a medium where storylines can evolve over the course of a season and all that kind of stuff. Not so much with Netflix, since they shoot everything beforehand and release it all in one batch, but that's not really a feeling that you want to seep out into the actual episodes themselves, you know.
For sure. You published this article on Slash Film about a bunch of Stranger Things theories that are going around. I think let's start off with some people believe that this show actually connects to Stephen King's It. It is kind of ridiculous, but it's fun, which is why we wrote about it. So how could Stranger Things actually be connected to Stephen King's It?
Yeah, so this is, I, for the record, I don't really believe this theory, but I don't think anybody actually believes this theory.
It's just, yeah, it's fun.
But, you know, the Duffers have made no secret about their love for Stephen King and how heavily his work has influenced Stranger Things. So the connection for season 2 is that Bob's parents, Bob, the character played by Sean Astin, his parents are from Maine, which is obviously a huge location in Stephen King lore, specifically It. And Bob was haunted by an evil clown when he was a kid, which would have been in the late 1950s. So the theory is that Bob was maybe a victim of Pennywise, who escaped and you know, somehow managed to live his life not being completely tormented by that character. Finn Wolfhard, who appears in both Stranger Things and the this year's movie adaptation of It, says the same line in both properties. I guess Bob also found victory over the clown when he stopped showing fear, which is a similar sort of plot device that's used in the story It. And somebody else says that when Bob imitates the clown, when he's explaining the story to Will in the car, he says, "Hey, kid, do you want a balloon?" And it sounds very close to how Pennywise sounds, which I don't know.
That's
about
a little
that
reaching.
Yeah. I don't buy that.
Do you think that this could possibly be just the Duffer? Like, do you think this is intentional at all, or do you think there's fans reading into it? Like, and by intentional, I don't mean that they're connected. Do you think the Duffer Brothers, that this was an Easter egg?
Yes, yeah, totally. Yeah, especially with how cognizant they are of all of Stephen King's work. I mean, if you look at the freaking font for Stranger Things, that's ripped straight out of a Stephen King font. I think the idea of Bob's parents being from Maine and the mention of a clown are, yes, 100%, cognizant references by the Duffer Brothers to Stephen King's work, but I don't necessarily think that they share, you know, the same actual universe. But there is one other theory that we wrote about in that same article that I feel like, I don't know what you think about this, Peter, but I feel like it has a little bit more potential. I think they're calling it the Mind Flayer theory, but in Stranger Things 2, Episode 8, which is called The Mind Flayer, Dustin suggests a parallel between the Shadow Monster and a character from Dungeons & Dragons called the Mind Flayer. Nerdist has defined, they looked up the Dungeons & Dragons manual and defined this character as a member of a race of psionic tyrants from another dimension that harvest entire races for their own twisted ends and live in an evil subterranean cave network known as the Underdark. And in D&D Mythos, there are more powerful mind flayers that exist out there. They're known as arcanists and liches, I believe. And they use sorcery to make their powers even more impressive than they already are. And the theory is that because we saw Eleven using her, you know, equivalent of force powers, basically, to close this portal between her world and the Upside Down at the end of Stranger Things 2, and we saw the Shadow Monster, the Mind Flayer, we saw that creature see Eleven do this from the inside. The theory is that maybe Eleven is going to be the next victim of this thing in the new season, specifically so it can hijack her powers for its own nefarious purposes. So that is something...
Oh, come on. What are the chances that they're going to kill off Eleven? She's like such a big star in the series. Like,
well, I don't know about killing her off, but definitely being a new host. And it sort of is interesting because we wrote another article where the Duffer Brothers sort of hinted at something similar when they were talking about the end of season two. They said the hope we wanted people to get out of it is that this thing is still out there. They've shut the door on the Mind Flayer, but not only is it still there in the Upside Down, it's very much aware of the kids and particularly Eleven. It had not encountered her and her powers until that final episode. Now it knows that she's out there. We wanted to end on a little bit of an ominous note on that level. So this theory and that comment sort of leads me to believe that that could be a direction that they're heading for season three. I don't think they would kill her off, but I do think it would retroactively make the ending of Stranger Things 2 a little bit better for me, because like we talked about in our review, I feel like the Shadow Monster just sort of sits there while the portal is closing. But if you
and it cares nothing but about the kids in the school, like that's the only thing it cares about.
Right. Yeah. But if you go back, you know, with this knowledge, if you go back and look at it and think that maybe it's sort of sizing up Eleven and thinking about the potential for what it could do with her powers, that sort of makes it play a little bit better to me. So maybe that's where they're thinking about going for season three. Do you still doubt this as a real thing?
I don't doubt it. I mean, chapter 7, I think, of the show kind of shows us, you know, Eleven coming to grips with, you know, her powers being used for, you know, not so good or maybe evil doing. As a consumer of movies and television, I really hate it when a bad guy possesses a good guy. Like, I really hated the whole storyline with Will this season. I hate it when, you know, when Superman gets, you know, controlled by someone and has red eyes and, you know, is out to, just seems like such a stupid plot device, and I can't quite get over it. Even in a fantasy world where there's, you know, shadow monsters, I can't quite get over the idea of someone being possessed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, my hope is that if this does happen, it only happens for a couple episodes or something. Instead, you know, it's a larger part or a smaller part of a larger story, instead of being the entire, you know, thrust of season three, where Eleven is sort of turned into the villain by it is a way for them to rework the dynamic again, but I think we talked a lot about on the previous episode that we wanted the dynamic from season one to return, not a whole different one to be introduced into the picture. So we'll see.
It is interesting that the Department of Energy is kind of like, they're no longer kind of like this big villain character in this franchise. At least, you know, I mean, maybe something will be introduced in season three. Mm-hmm. There really isn't a villain in this franchise other than the Shadow Monster, right?
Right, yeah, which is why I think that they might sort of be leaning toward that as a bigger part of the story, since you don't really have that human element to sort serve as like a counterbalance to it.
No, I think this makes sense. You can read this whole article on slashfilm.com. I will link it in the show notes along with all the other articles we mentioned on today's podcast. You can find more of all these articles on slashfilm.com. You can find more of Ben at Ben Pears on Twitter. You can find more of me at slashfilm on Twitter. You can find this podcast published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. And please go to iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review. That always helps us out, especially if you love the podcast. We love hearing from you. So please send your feedback and questions to peter@slashfilm.com. And please leave your name and general geographic location in case we want to mention it on the air. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you on Monday.